Welcome, Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast number 53. It is your host, Mario and Brian. Mario, what is up?
I'm just pouring a little more of my drink and hanging out on a nice day before we start a big long weekend.
That's right. It is almost Memorial Day weekend, which to most skiers is a horrible weekend. It's pretty much the Labor Day for kids going back to school, because that means the good times are more or less over. But you know what? We're going to be positive this year. We're going to have a fun summer. We're going to do good stuff. And that's what our topic is going to be today. You can find out more information, skibumpodcast.com. Follow us on all of our social media links, twitter.com/skibumpodcast. Facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast, Instagram.com/SkiBumPodcast, Tumblr.com/SkiBumPodcast, or email us, SkiBumPodcast@gmail.com. So with that, Mario, the weekly flavor.
No, that's not the weekly flavor, but that is.
I was beginning to wonder if that's like the special summer edition of the weekly flavor. Different music, a little remix, but no.
We're remixing it. We're just playing around with people.
Messing with y'alls.
So weekly flavor this week, I am I'm going back to a little Colorado, a little bit of Breckenridge bourbon whiskey. So
that's
I'm
so good.
Thinking about skiing still and trying to keep it real with a little made from the ski runoff in Colorado with the snow melt this is made from. So made at 9,600 feet with snow melt from the Rocky Mountains. So
snow melt is so good.
It's hitting the spot right now.
Little bits of wax.
Yeah. Spill a gun in there, right? We found somebody forgot a gun.
That was in Wyoming. If that's Wyoming whiskey, then you're getting guns.
Oh, that's right. I'm sure they have guns on the slopes in somewhere in Colorado, right?
No doubt.
How about you, bro? What do you got?
Well, you know, it's fun. It's fun going to the liquor store after you've already had a couple drinks. Because you're a lot more inspired to buy things that you might not have bought before. Not this isn't the case for what I picked up, but it made me a little – it made me definitely pick it up just having had a couple beforehand. So what I'm having is Stone Brewing Company. They create these different lines of beer called Enjoy By or Enjoy After. So they want you to drink it before for the Enjoy Bys and the Enjoy Afters. They want you to age a little bit. By 5/30/16 Tangerine IPA.
Oh, wow.
And basically, you go to the website and it has the countdown for how long you have left to enjoy the beer. So it's almost like Mission Impossible. You got like 3 days, 7 hours, 45 minutes, and 40 seconds left.
Wow. Is it explode or something like that after that date?
I'm afraid to find out. That's why I had to open it. I didn't want to see what happened if it expired.
You chicken shit. You got to go to like 6/1 and see what happens.
Yeah, I should pick up another one if I could find it. But this is so good. I mean, this is, you know, along the line of all those double IPAs we talk about all the time and love. You know, it's kind of a little sip of sunshiny, I guess you could say.
It's got it's not a lot of citrus in there. It's just a little hint.
It's got a bit. It's got a healthy dose of citrus in there.
Cool.
Kind of like the Sculpins in a way, the Ballast Points. You know, kind of almost a love child of those two.
Somebody was telling me this year they have a pineapple Sculpin.
You are correct, sir. They do.
Well,
I haven't tried it yet either. I love this. You know what? I kind of want to get the habanero and the pineapple and do a half and half.
Oh, there you go.
Like a black and tan.
Yeah.
It's almost like a spicy pineapple.
Hot and sweet.
Yeah, sweet and right. It's gotta be amazing.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
So this beer is good. I'm gonna tell you to go out and get it, but you don't have much time left. By the time this gets posted, probably tomorrow, Friday, there'll be less than 2 days left. So.
Oh, you got to run out now and get it.
Go now.
The market.
Find it. Enjoy it because you're running out of time.
Damn.
Yep.
So, all right. So now we have a little bit of ski news.
There's the ski news music.
There's the ski news music. All right. So we got a lot going on for ski news. You want me to start this one off, Bri?
Yeah, you start it off. You got this.
All right, so to start off, we got a very much more comforting story than the situation we had this winter. La Nina is coming. So I guess usually after El Nino, then you get a La Nina year. And it's a different phase of where I believe it's you getting cooler average temperatures in the ocean. So it's just a little bit, it causes different things than the El Nino effect had. And generally for us, for skiing, last time we had a La Nina situation, it was a lot better. El Nino was kind of always hit or miss, but La Nina seems to be like the magic situation for us. So they're saying a La Nina watch is in effect, a 75% chance that it will develop in fall of 2016, just in time for our beautiful ski season.
And damn then, good chances.
That's right. 75%. That's not bad.
That's goddamn good.
And then you saw this too, Brian, like last time we had a strong La Nina, 2010, 2011, USA all over got tons of snow.
Yeah, that's a nice thing, because when it's an El Nino season, the East Coast gets is SOL and the West Coast gets pounded. But La Nina is just – that's just smiles and happiness and powder for everybody. So the totals we're looking at here on Snowbrains, they were showing Alpine Meadows, California had 852 inches of snow.
That's insane.
And then it goes down the list. And at the bottom – now, bottom – is relative speaking, is Jay Peak, Vermont, with 376 inches of snow.
Damn.
That's serious snow for Vermont. You know, in between all of our favorites, you know, Alta, Jackson Hole, Whistler. And to, I'm going to talk about, you know, one thing we didn't really, you know, put in our outline, but I wanted to mention it. So last Monday, which was, I believe, the 15th, Killington, Vermont got 5 inches of snow. And they posted it on their website and on, you know, the social media accounts. That was 6% of the total for the season.
That's crazy.
That was what a shit show, awful, useless ski season it was this year. That a 5-inch drop in May was 6% of the total.
That's rough. You know what?
They're still open.
Yeah, we had some of our friends on Instagram were posting that they were up there, and they actually posted pictures of them skiing.
Yeah, and that kind of runs right into our next topic. I'm going to actually jump ahead and do a different order here. There are still 9 resorts open in North America.
Oh, which ones?
One of them is Killington, Vermont, which I don't know how they're doing it. I mean, yeah, the spring has been kind of not that hot yet, and it's still this week, but they're still going to be open, probably until they're looking like Memorial Day is going to be the end.
That's amazing.
But somehow they're keeping it open. Other mountains that have some actual real snow and are still open, we've got Snowbird, which is going to be closing up this weekend on the 30th. Timberline Lodge in Oregon. They're back to normal, looking to close around September-ish.
Why even bother closing? Right.
Well, you gotta do some maintenance and some cleanup and a little bit of prep for the real season.
That's wild.
I think last year they closed in April, which was unprecedented for them. So this year things are back to normal. Mammoth, they're looking at June-ish. A Basin out in Colorado, they're saying June 5th at the absolute earliest they're going to close. Squaw is going to probably close this weekend, Memorial Day. Whistler's going to close this weekend, and Mount Bachelor is going to close this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Killington holding strong. I'm looking to pick the superstar. It's looking all right. You know, I don't know how they're keeping it up, but they're somehow keeping it open, which is pretty sweet.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. You know, if I was less than 2 hours away, I would have made a couple trips up there, but making that 4-hour drive, it's just, I can't justify it.
Yeah, I thought about it, but I just got busy with other stuff going on. We found a whole bunch of cool things that we did over the weekend. So
yeah,
I think we filled that empty cup with a lot of cool stuff, you know.
No doubt.
But, well, following that, with the ski resorts that are still open, story that we have here is U.S. ski resorts rack up 53.9 million skier and snowboarder visits.
Damn.
So while we had a horrible season on the East Coast, all over the U.S. in general had a really good season. And I think we covered it even at the beginning of the season, how even last year there were some, you know, skiers that were posting record numbers.
So I think with all the improvements that people made on some of these resorts, they've been just being able to get more and more visitors. And I think people are just generally looking to get out and ski and board, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, so, the one thing about those stats that was the one negative about it, it said that it was still down about 4.6% below the 10-year industry average of 56.5 million. So it was down a bit, but I mean, when you would, you pretty much have almost no ski season in the Northeast, and the amount of population that's there, you're obviously going to have a bit of a ding in your numbers. But that really isn't that bad. I mean, 4.6% for an entire, pretty much an entire region that had almost nothing.
Yeah, I mean, 53.9 up from 53.6. So, I mean, that's not bad. We had a great season last year on the East Coast. Not so good on the West Coast. And now this year it flipped around. So it's kind of, yeah, I mean, not bad.
Not bad at all, yeah. And so, then hopefully with this La Nina, hopefully, I'm going to put a prediction out there right now. I'm saying 57 million visitors for the 2016-2017 season.
All right, we're going to have to go back sometime and look at this next year.
57. I'm saying we're going above average.
57. There was, you know, it's just like I see it locally too. Like, so I have a bunch of friends that signed up for ski clubs, you know, for their kids to get them some time on the slopes. And some of them didn't even get out more than two times because of how bad of a season it was. You know, they try to go to, you know, places in Pennsylvania or New Jersey where it's closer to them. But for example, when they would have normally gone 6 to 8 times, they only went like twice.
Yeah, I talked to a buddy last night who, you know, playing hockey with him. We're talking about skiing, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, last year I bought a triple play from Mountain Creek. I didn't even use it. I'm wow. Like, well, you really had about 4 days to use it last year because there was the big dumping, you know, the epic storm that hit, and then it was gone a week later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people who, yeah, again, like exactly like you said, people do 6 to 8 trips, did zero this year. So, you know, you get enough of those people, a couple thousand of those people, that really adds up quick.
I mean, even if you consider, let's say East Coast skiing accounts for, let's say, 30% of that total number. If you basically had half of what you normally have, which is being generous, that makes up for a lot of the difference of what they're saying, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, so we're already looking to next year. It's Memorial Day weekend, but we're looking towards next ski season already.
That's what we do.
That's what we do. You know what? I was in kind of a bummer mood. It started getting really hot this week. And then I went on and read a couple of articles on powder and, you know, started researching stuff for the podcast this week. And I was instantly in a better mood.
Oh, yeah.
No joking.
I signed up. I'm getting these alerts from, like, Portillo and Valle Navarro. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm getting these alerts. And I'm like, shit, I got to go skiing in South America.
Dude, I know, right?
I'm still looking.
That's going to be a thing. That's going to be our thing soon.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but I'm looking. If I find a good deal, like, the problem is I'd have to book my own trip by myself, which isn't a bad deal. But I'm talking about going solo, and that's, I don't know, it's a big step for me.
That's a tough one, yeah.
I'm a little Rain Man-ish when it comes to traveling alone.
Well, you know what? It's nice when you have, you know, companies like Evo.com even, who set up those trips, so you can just be from anywhere, and, you know, they set up, you know, a certain number of people they need to have. But it's cool that these companies do have these, you know, South American trips set up, so you can just pay and, you know, commit and just show up, which, you know, we're big fans of that. We got things we got to take care of, like all of our podcasting, our empire that we're building here. These are the things we have to take care of on a daily basis. We don't have time to book, you know, six, you know, arrays of transportation between us and South American Ski Resort.
That's right. Plus, I'm on a bum budget. I'm still trying to do it on a bum budget, even though I got highfalutin dreams.
I hear you, brother. That's what we do.
I mean, I saw a lot of good trips that were run that were just like probably like 3 times more than I wanted to spend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, and then I'm rationalizing. I'm like, I could rent a house out west and invite a bunch of buddies to come out for the same price. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
So I'm like, I'd rather share the love and invite people out to a house, you know, just get a VRBO.
Oh, that's true too, yeah.
You know, invite a bunch of people, say party out in Telluride or out in Jackson or, you know, Utah somewhere.
Hells yeah. I like it.
Yeah. And then also this week too, like there's been stuff going on with our ski club. They did elections and already people are starting rumors about where they might go this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, you know, the people that are, that get on the board, they're actually already pre-talking to the people that were on the board about what they were looking at for or what they were thinking for trips. So you hear these little rumors leak out. And by the middle of the summer, if you dig around and you talk to enough people in the know, you find out like where it's probably going to be, where the trips are probably going to go. So I don't know. I'll let you know. We'll have to talk about rumors that we hear about where we're going to go.
Yeah, loose lips sink ships, and it's easy to sink a ship when you can involve booze with it.
That's right. A drinking booze club, infused ship is good for everybody.
A drinking club that occasionally skis.
That's right.
All right, and next up, this story we found on Snowbrains. We milked them for a lot of stories this week because they're so awesome over there. And it was about the origins of skiing. And they're saying that the origins of skiing could be 8,000 years old, which is pretty, pretty awesome. And it talks
like
about
a caveman on skis?
You're exactly right. That's exactly what it is. And it talks about the Sami people, which were, you know, kind of in northern Scandinavia. And they used skis as a superior form of snow transportation because that they've discovered that worked best for them getting around in their environment, which, you know, they used it. That's why, you know, sports like the biathlon in the Olympics, you look at it now and it seems kind of dumb, but you know, that's what people who were living in those areas in Scandinavia, in those areas, that's how they lived their lives and got their food every day. You know, there was no Whole Foods they could roll up to and get a big old vat of organic kale or, you know, vegan reindeer, if that even exists. They had to go out and they had
hunting
to hunt the food that way. They were hunting. That's exactly how they were hunting. You know, originally it was a crossbow, you know, or a bow and arrow, whatever, you know, as time went on, you know, a different evolution of their weapons. But yeah, the most recent one was that of a rifle.
I knew somebody in college that was from Sweden, and she was, you know, I was just amazed because at the time I was pretty sheltered. I didn't have any idea about like how like remote some of these places still are in modern age. And she was saying when she grew up, she used to ski everywhere. She used to like ski to school. And I was like, what do you mean? She was from Sweden. And that's what they did. She was in a small little town and they skied to school. They skied to the market downtown everywhere.
That's so awesome.
It's crazy, right? It's awesome.
I don't know if you saw that article I sent you today. It's from Powder Magazine. They had a story that they posted this week about, I think it's pronounced Senja, S-E-N-J-A Island
in
Norway. And it's pretty much a fjord in the Arctic Circle on the ocean that you can hike up to and ski.
So what is a fjord exactly?
A fjord is like a cliff on the water, isn't it?
I have no idea. I'm so illiterate.
I wish you had brought that up when we were prepping the show because I had a perfect definition for it. Long, narrow, deep inlet of the sea between high cliffs.
Okay.
It's typically formed by submergence of a glaciated valley.
Because they have a ton of them up there by then.
Yeah.
I know they talk about the fjords, so.
Yeah, it's pretty much like a cliff that's been created by the water.
Wow.
So yeah, that article, they're showing Senja Island, and it looks unbelievable. And in the article, it talks about, you know, there's a group of, you know, about eight folks that are skiing there, and they have their guide who's from Sweden. And they're saying the Americans just can't keep up. And it's not that the Americans are out of shape. They just talk about how, you know, the Swedes and the Norwegians that are there, I mean, it's in their blood. It's in their DNA. This is what they've done for thousands of years, you know? So there's just something so natural about it that occurs to them.
Well, they were talking about, I guess when they wrote that article, they were on a trek trip, right? So they were trekking through, which is you're basically cross-country skiing or hiking to get to where you ski, which just sounds freaking awesome because you're basically out there all day for multiple days. You're out and camping and stuff too. So That just looks pretty cool.
There's no trams. There's no Starbucks. There's nothing like that at all. This is just hardcore. It's just you and the mountain, pretty much.
Yeah, and the wolves.
And the wolves, of course.
The dire wolves
that are perhaps out the Sasquatch is there. We don't know.
That's right. You wouldn't even be able to tell because if you didn't come back, that nobody would even know.
Exactly. Just get gobbled up. So in the article, too, they have a little bit of skiing history, and they say the word ski comes from the old Norse word, I guess it's pronounced skia. I'm totally destroying that, so if anyone wants to correct me, please.
Skia.
Which means a split piece of firewood.
Hmm.
Pretty cool. So 6300 BC, the world's oldest skis were discovered in Russia near Lake Sindor. 4000 BC, rock carvings of a skier from this period were discovered in Norway. 3300 BC, skis from this time period were discovered in Finland. They were 180 centimeters long and 15 centimeters wide. These skis have 5 grooves. Interesting. Not sure what the grooves were for, or if they were on the bottom, I guess.
For the 8 tracks, for all the different record tracks they had. No.
put the needle on the record. 2700 BC, 2 skis and a pole were dug out of a bog in Sweden. 2500 BC, archaeologists discovered rock drawings that depict a man on skis holding a stick. The drawings were discovered on a Norwegian island.
That's crazy.
And then 200 BC to 200 AD, first documented reference to skiing in China.
Hmm.
So are they saying that perhaps Jesus was a skier?
JC was on skis before he went to Jerusalem, baby.
I think so.
I'm setting the rumor there. And I just want to know that 6300 BC, was that Putin putting that out after everybody came out? He said, no, we've been doing it in Russia longer.
Pretty much. That's why he can annex anything that had skiing involved in it.
Making his own. He's writing the history, making his own shit up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just like 10 goals on his birthday. That story still kills me.
Yeah, that was the best. He's playing against former NHLers, and he's like lighting the lamp up at 60 years old.
It was current NHLers, too. I was like, what the fuck? What the hell? Come on, man.
That's what Putin does.
That's what he does. That's what he does best.
Isn't it cool, too, seeing, like, you see this history, and you realize that, you know, skiing was a necessity for them just to survive their habitat back then. And now it's just a fun activity for us. It's a sport.
Well, if you think about it, it's efficient. You know, it's cross country, you know, so you're putting something on your feet so you don't sink in the snow. So it does make sense. I mean, if they were doing that a long time.
Yeah, it all comes from necessity, but now it's just a fun activity for us.
Yeah.
It's crazy. We live in a very spoiled time.
Oh, and here we go. We just drive up in warmth, get all bundled up in our warm clothes, and we have some lift just take us up. We have heated lifts and gondolas and stuff, and we're such a bunch of babies compared to the originals, right?
Fancy SUVs, and we're stopping for Starbucks a couple times on the way up, you know?
They were in windbreakers and, like, open-toed shoes doing this stuff and
they had to walk up. They're wearing, like, animal pelts. You know, they're tying whatever, like, leather shoes they made from whatever was left over of that animal to their feet.
And there's no power bar. They're eating the animal that's on their back. They're eating the jerky from that animal. That's all they got.
Yeah. There's no gluten-free snacks available for these folks. They want as much gluten as they get their hands on.
Yeah, the gluten people would just die, I guess. Everything would just die off.
Yeah. Kind of a side mark, a side story to that. Did you hear about the one lady who died at Mount Everest last week or this week?
No.
She died. She was 34 years old. She was trying to prove that vegans are strong. So she wanted to try to climb to Mount Everest. And she got
strong, Joe Rogan.
She got stuck in the dead zone.
Oh,
and,
man.
Yeah, she ended up dying.
Dude, did you see that movie Everest yet?
No, I have not.
Fucking terrifying, man. Every time I hear think of Everest now, I'm like, damn, that's the real deal, man. You don't screw around.
No, it is not to be messed with.
Because that's based on a true story of, like, I think half of the trip didn't come back. It was crazy.
3 people died there this past week.
Yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. They got people just laying around. There's frozen people. They can't take them off.
That one band there where there's all those just corpses there is so creepy. They have all those pictures of it, and they have nicknames for all of them, like Green Boots and whatever. Yeah.
I guess the crazy part is, like, they get up there to the summit, and the weather really – it's not like they see the weather coming and have that much advance. It's like the weather just blows right in, and it's just, like, blizzard conditions, whiteout. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's not to be messed with. That's for sure.
And like 27,000 feet. I don't know. There's no air. There's absolutely zero air. It's crazy.
They said that dead zone where that lady got into trouble. That's what they say. You just can't stay in that area for too long. And she, for some reason, was stuck in there for a while. And wow. Yeah.
Well, I guess a lot of them go with oxygen, but if you don't have oxygen, there are some people that I guess train their body to go up without oxygen. That's really amazing. But
Wim Hof didn't need oxygen.
He didn't need a jacket. He just walked right up there.
Didn't he go barefoot or he wore sandals, right? Shorts and sandals.
I don't know if he went to Everest though.
No, didn't he climb Everest?
He might have. I don't know if he was naked though.
I don't think he was naked.
Might not have been naked.
But who's gonna see him?
That's right. Imagine being up there just butt naked on top of Everest.
It's like, hey, you finally made it. Now the party can start.
That's right. And then you ski down. Just find some crazy rock line and just go down.
Yeah, dude, he wore shorts and shoes. That's all he wore. And he climbed Mount Everest.
Wow. He's like, bunch of babies. Look at this. I'm going up here.
That dude is so awesome.
Bunch of Marys. You sit here with your cushy furs and I'm going to go walk up.
Sponsored by North Face and all that nonsense.
That's right.
Yeah.
Got like stickers on him, like a NASCAR, like stickers on
him. Yeah. Got the Golden Palace tattoo on his forehead. Oh, <that's> remember that dummy?
Best choice ever. Best
Golden Palace.
Every once in a while, like they have that show, like Tattoo Rescue, whatever. And you see these horrible tattoos people come in with. And the stories behind when they got them, it's just like, oh, it's such a bad decision.
You know what's great too? If you type in Golden Palace into Google, all you get are like Chinese restaurants.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Yeah, that was for $10,000. I don't know if I would do that.
Yeah, that's not really worth that.
I'd get a Ski Bum podcast tattoo, that's for sure.
Boom, right on my chest.
That's right. Right on my forehead.
Forehead, baby.
Yeah. Terrible. All right, we got one more story left, right?
Yeah, so next we've been following Jay Peak because they're close to us, and they're
is there going
to
be something like Netflix miniseries about Jay Peak? Because I feel like this could like rival the OJ miniseries they have.
There's got to be a freaking 30 for 30 on Jay Peak.
Or like this is like Game of Thrones for Northeast skiing, pretty much.
Oh, it's horrible. So Jay Peak's tram now they're saying can't run before $4.5 million in upgrades are done to it. So digging into the story, it's you know, you read it at face value, and you know, if anybody has been following, Jay Peak, really good ski area, great tree skiing up in Vermont. They get a lot of snow. They had this whole big scandal where the SEC came in and found the owners guilt. Well, they're charging the owners with misusing money from future projects for current operations, which they classified as like a Ponzi scheme. So it's still in courts, but they froze all the assets and everything. The problem now is to operate, they have this big tram. It's like one of their iconic trams. It looks very similar to like the Jackson Hole tram, but of course it's Jay Peak and it's really old. And they're checking it out and they don't know if they're gonna be able to operate it during the summer. But they said if they don't start the $4.5 million upgrade project to upgrade it, it may not be ready to operate in the winter. So that's the face value of the story. But then you start digging into it, reading, and it's like, holy crap. One of the reasons they have to do this upgrade is it started in 1966. It went into use. And Doppelmayr, which is the big, you know, lift company, you see Doppelmayr and everything, they came out and they said, the tram had been carrying too much weight once it started in 1966 due to a mistake in the original operating manual.
So it's been operating for, 45 years with the wrong weight limit?
Yeah.
That's good.
So they've been overloading this lift for that long, which is great that there's been no problems, but it's just what? And I guess now that it's public knowledge, now it's potentially like they know if God forbid something were to happen, I guess it's a really big, you know, they know about it now versus that's just amazing to me. So that's why they're saying a lot of the they said it's safe. They said they've checked it out and it's able to run, but they said they're not going to let it run for the summer season unless they begin the work, because they said it's going to put extra you know, load on it that they don't want to put on it. They rather wait for the winter and see what happens. But I guess it's just another big result of this nightmare that they've caused up in J-Peak.
Oh, what a mess. Now, here's the question. This could be the solution to the entire problem. So can J-Peak now sue Doppelmayr and get the money they need to fix the tram?
Probably not, because it was probably warranted for a certain number of years.
Statute of limitations. God damn it.
Well, no, and they didn't have an issue. So what are you going to say? If there was no loss, you could sue them and they could win it. But if they were at no loss, and there's no accident and there's no extra money they had to put into it, they really weren't at a loss for what they got. So I wonder if that plays into it, and they're just trying to do the fixes that they need to do. Because, I mean, 40 years, it's a long time, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If all the fatties in there did fit, you must have quit.
Oh, it's just horrible to think that, like, and I always think about it when I'm on a lift. I'm like, can this hold this many people? I know they have weight limits and they check things, but I'm like, this was mislabeled since 66, and who's ever going to go back and check, really? You know what I mean?
And you know what? The Swiss, not known for making mistakes like that.
Yeah.
They're usually very on top of those kind of things.
But it was probably rated for below that, and probably actually could have handled, well, obviously could have handled more, if not a lot more. Because a lot of times they rate them at, like, you know, 60 or 80% of what they can hold, you know.
Oh, they definitely over-engineer those things. For sure. You have, you know, 80 people, you know, 70 feet above the ground, you're definitely going to make some, make sure that there's no chance of any problems or failures. That's for sure.
Well, and it's interesting to say, because you take the average American weight in 1966 probably
130 probably
three
pounds
quarters, or two thirds of what it is today. Right.
That's pre-Chipotle. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Pre-Chipotle, pre-super big gulp size. Like
pre-Red Bull, you know.
Yeah. Pre-Cake Pops.
Pre-Cake Pops, yeah. There's a lot of things that exist now that did not exist back then that's forcing us to get fatter.
Oh, yeah. It only keeps getting bigger.
There was no hot dogs in your pizza crust back in 1966.
Now we have hot dogs on the lift.
Hot dogs on the lift.
Wait, we have waffles on the right by the bottom of the lift. They used to not have that.
That's a good idea, though. Waffles are a good idea.
So I'm wondering if we outgrew the weight limit as Americans, because they say, you know, 135 people or, you know, 80 people. Well, 80 people at, you know, average 130 pounds versus 180 pounds is a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, this is really bad timing for this to have happened to them up at J-Peak.
Oh, brutal. It's just another...
Well, now, what if Bernie Sanders becomes president? Can he fix this?
I want to see Bernie Sanders buy that place and fix it up nice.
Yeah.
Or Donald Trump. Donald Trump buy it. Make it the most luxurious...
Trump Peak.
Trump Peak.
Trump Peak. I like it.
Bernie Sanders and Trump join forces and buy the place.
It's the most American thing possible.
I would love to be in the boardroom. Just the fights that would be great.
That's the kind of bipartisan politicking I want to see.
No, Bernie, we can't have weed on the list. But we have to have the weed on the list.
It can't be Vermont without weed on the list.
If we're going to have weed, we're going to have to grow our own weed, because it'll be the most luxurious weed.
Why don't they grow weed on top of the lift?
Oh,
make a little garden up top there. All right, one less person because of the weight required for the garden on the top of the lift. But you're going to have fresh weed every couple weeks.
I wonder if for tax reasons you get farm status that way.
Oh, there you go.
Well, it's really a planter. It's not really a lift. It's a planter.
It's a planter.
That moves and tries to get the weed all of the light at different angles.
I think the only problem with our little plan is that it's wintertime. Unless they make it a greenhouse.
Oh, boom.
Greenhouse weed on top of the gondola.
Greenhouse weed house.
Or the tram. Yeah.
That's right.
That's the future right there.
Donald could call it the Trump instead of the tram.
Call it the Trump. Call it whatever the hell you want, as long as call we can make it happen.
The Bernie Trump. Bernie.
Burn one for Trump.
That's right.
Yeah. So that about wraps up our ski news this week. So we're going to continue to follow this whole J-Peak debacle and see where it ends up. But
You're finding out there's a lot of ski news every week, which is good.
There's always tons of ski news. Lots of good stuff.
I think this La Nina thing isn't going away, because I checked two other sites today, and everybody's tracking La Nina already.
Confirmation bias. That's what it is. It wants to believe right now that this is going to happen, especially all of us in the Northeast. We're like, dude, La Nina, 85% is going to happen. I have no meteorological charts to prove it, but I'm going to keep on spouting it because I want to believe.
It's in the books. Pretty soon it's going to be – it's a given. It's you know, solid.
I remember in September of last year, you know, this is the things you learn after doing this podcast for a year. You see patterns kind of forming. And I think it was around September of last year, there was one of those winter precipitation prediction charts. And they were showing the Northeast, just like Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, just blanketed like purple, like extreme, you know, snowfall, extreme precipitation. And we are here to tell you that that did not happen.
We were those idiots in December going up there saying, we're going to have epic power, we're going to ski treat, everything's going to be open. Yeah, that was.
But you know what? Because we are the highfalutin ski bums and we do more than just ski, we made it one of the most epic beer journeys in the history of man.
That was, yeah, that was. I got to say, that was well liked too. We got.
And I'm still not ready for bathing suit season because of that.
I know. I gotta do more sit-ups or something, man. I haven't been on the bike either that much, only a few times.
So much good beer. So much good beer.
So, and it keeps coming.
Oh, it's so good. They keep making a new good beer. And now, freaking Alchemist, we'll talk about that eventually this summer time. Alchemist opened their new brewery up in Stowe.
Boom. That's a trip up there.
That would be a fun trip, yeah.
I went to Cigar City this last weekend.
This is kind of our topic, too, just so you guys know. Topic number 53. We're talking about summer. We're talking about we're going to be positive. We're going to have fun. There you go. Shake it. Shake it. Shake it like a Polaroid picture.
You got the background. Go ahead. So what are we talking about?
We're talking about, yeah, it's summertime. And usually as skiers, we hate this time of year. And I know I've been guilty of – I get seasonal depression in the summer. Yeah, I do. Believe it. Talk to my doctor. This year – we're going to be positive. We actually have some really cool stuff going on already that we talked about. You know, we had our America's Cup Gosling event. Mario and I have been traveling the last couple of weeks. We're doing a lot of fun, cool things. So we're going to be positive this summer. We're going to put good vibes out there. We're going to
doing Yankee games.
We're doing Yankee games.
Hockey games. Like all sorts of shit.
Yeah. So now you were just saying you were traveling.
Yeah. So I had to go down to Florida for a multitude of reasons. Work. A funeral, and visit family. So while I was down there, I also did visit Cigar City Brewery.
Oh, very cool.
So had a little High Life on tap.
Ooh, nice. That's good stuff.
Yeah. They had this other one called it was either Endurance or started with an E. It was really good. It was another IPA, not as hoppy as the High Life, but the High Life's pretty damn good, I got to say.
Maduro?
No, it wasn't the Maduro.
No.
It was.
I just typed in Cigar City and they were showing their beers.
The beers?
Their beers. Now, wasn't there one that you had up in Vermont that was made like in association with them too?
I think that was at the farmhouse in
Hill Farm.
Burlington.
Oh, the farmhouse. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, that farmhouse restaurant we went to, farmer table place.
Yeah, they had one beer they made with one of the local Vermont ones that was really, really good.
He did one with Rock Art, right?
Rock Art.
And Otter Creek, I think, they did one too.
Yeah, there's a bunch of those funky ones that were different breweries together were making something cool.
Yeah.
There was the one Lawson's made, that limoncello IPA, which was so good.
Oh, that was really cool.
That was really good. So you said it wasn't the Maduro? Oh, Invasion?
Invasion, that's what it was.
Is it pale ale?
It was pale ale. It was really good.
They got Florida Cracker. Did you have that?
Cracker? No, I didn't have that. They didn't have it. I didn't go to the brewery. I only went to their tap house.
Okay.
Which is down the road. And it's funny, I was talking to somebody down there that we went with, my niece. She said the brewery has different beers than the tap house does, because I guess they're on, you know, they're on the brewing schedule, and the tap house, they'll just carry stuff that they have that's canned already too. So they carry a mix. Yeah.
I had one of the recent times I was in Florida, it had some sort of red ale.
Yes.
And trying to find out what it was called.
I had their red ale when I was down there. Let me see.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I don't see it on here right now. I'm looking at their list, CigarCityBrewing.com. And they got some funky stuff.
Yeah, they try to mix it up, but...
Oh, Tacobaga. Tokobaga, I think it's called. Red ale.
I don't think that was there. They have a cucumber saison. Good, yeah. That sounds pretty good.
Cucumber saison. Interesting. Yeah, you know, I've noticed looking at all the beers that are coming out now for the summer, a lot of those gozas are coming out. I don't know if you've been paying attention. Remember, like, last year we were looking, there was one place up in Vermont we were going to stop at during Ski Bum Week, and they were like, this is the first place that's put out a goza because the recipes were just lost. And yeah. Now, all of a sudden, they're just popping up all over the place.
Well, we had one ghost one time on the podcast, and we didn't like it, just the one that we had. We were just kind of like, it wasn't our – but there's different ones that they're making out there, so
yeah, I'd be interested to try again. Yeah, but it's becoming a big trend now, so we're going to see probably a lot more of those coming from all over the place. So, yeah. we're going to keep our eyes open. We're going to keep our eyes peeled. We'll probably try some of the – couple of them over the summertime, considering there are so many of them out there now. But
yeah, so
anything else in your journey?
That was the big thing. Just visited family. Weather down there was nice. It was actually better than here. It wasn't as humid as it is up here.
Yeah, it started getting gross recently. This past week. Yeah. So I was in Boston for a conference a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
And Boston's a great city. You know, I went and I tried to go to the Ski Monster store, but, you know, for some reason they were closed at 7:30 p.m. on a Sunday. So I kind of solicited our podcast and stuck a card in the door there. Hopefully they didn't mind too much, but those guys are usually really cool. So, you know, went there, you know, went on the Charles River, went for a couple of runs there, had some great food, great conference. Boston is a fantastic town. Great vibe there. Very intense sport fans. You know, I'm sure we all know that. But fantastic town. I was in DC.
Really nice city.
Very good walking city, too. You can get around really easily. Trains are right there, too, if you need to go. I was in D.C. this past weekend, or D.C. area, for one of our podcast fans, Sly. It was his wedding. Him and Karen had a great, beautiful wedding. So shout out to you guys. And, yeah, it was a nice time down there as well. So been all over.
Congratulations, Sly.
Yeah. So there's rumor of he wants to get on the podcast, so we could maybe find a topic and bring him on, which would be a good time. He's always good for a conversation. Comes from a really good point of view and things.
Like we were talking before with the hangout now, we could add special guests all the time now, more often.
Yeah, definitely. So we might start playing with that over the summertime too. And, you know, we got some we have other plans in the works. We got a Yankee game coming up in a couple weeks that we're going to obviously, you know, tweet and Instagram lots of pictures from, and lots of other fun things going on this summer that we, you know, we'll get into more as the time comes, but a lot of good stuff coming up.
Yeah, I'm going to start hitting up, reaching out to High Nose, maybe do the bike ride with them, since they have a cool bike program, even though we usually go there in winter for skis, you know.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Wait, one thing, too, that's happening this week. Fleet Week is happening in New York City. So yesterday, all the ships were coming into port. So we were watching, and you just see all these, you know, battleships, and there's an aircraft carrier and all the smaller, you know, Coast Guard boats just going up the Hudson River. It was so crazy. There was so much boat traffic yesterday. Absolutely awesome. So if you're in New York City this weekend, you're a lady, if you want to find a sailor, or gentleman, if you want to find a sailor, this is the time to do it.
The time to do it. And not only that, just, you know, make sure you keep in mind that there's a time, even though people go to the beach and they have a lot of fun, it's really honoring the troops and the security and the you know, sacrifice that they give us. I mean, my brother, he's a vet. My brother-in-law is a vet. You know, it's touched me when they've gotten deployed overseas, Iraq, Kuwait, all over. And, you know, it's very important to realize that there are families that are missing their loved ones. And, you know, say thank you if you see them out on the street or do something nice.
Yeah, it's, you know, Memorial Day is not just a day off, everybody. There's a reason why that we're you know, celebrating it. And yeah, like Mario said, thank someone if you see them, and you realize that we enjoy a lot of freedoms and luxuries because of what those folks do.
So thank you. Putin at bay.
That's right. Putin and Kim Jong-il.
Oh, I was speaking of enjoying the freedoms that we have. So you talk about, you know, wars and stuff like that. And you know, I grew up with, I had a neighbor that was a World War II vet, and he flew in one of these bombers that very little success rate, you know, survival rate. But he had some crazy stories. And I just watched this week on Amazon, they have that series that they created called The Man in the High Castle.
Oh, and yeah.
It was pretty good. I got to say, it was a warped view of reality of what if Germany and Japan won World War II? What would life be like is kind of where the setting came in. So I guess the premise is that Germany developed a bomb before we did. They dropped it on DC. We surrendered. And then half of the US, three quarters of the US went to Germany. And, the other part went to Japan, and you have Americans living under their rule. And it's just bizarre, to think about, wow, that's, I guess, what it really would have been, you know, crazy, very crazy. So if you get a chance to watch it, actually it's a good weekend to watch it. And then you'll appreciate the sacrifice people have made over the years for us to have our freedom. It's pretty interesting premise. What if scenario.
Yeah, you know what? To me, the biggest kind of crazy thing about that what if scenario is, you know, Germany is the size of Wisconsin. I mean, it's not a very large country. And the fact that it could take over, you know, again, theoretically, and Japan, obviously not a very large country either, the two of them taking over the U.S.
Yeah. The amount of strength they have, military.
Yeah. It's amazing to think that could happen.
I was watching a show on History Channel. They were actually talking about how I think it was BMW or Mercedes was actually, I think it was BMW because they made planes in the war. Mm-hmm. And then after the war, they weren't allowed to make planes. So they went just into cars. But they actually had plans that they were trying to work out to bomb New York City. And I'm like, you don't think about this stuff. You're just like, wow. Well, I guess that's what it would have been. You know, they're German companies. That's what their focus was nationally, is wild. Not even like they had a choice to go along with it, you know?
Yeah, well, any company that was manufacturing anything was doing it for the war back then in Germany. Because, again, Germany was a small country. Everyone, you know, and again, this is how it was there at that time. Either you were with the Führer and the Nazis, or you were put in a camp. That was it. I mean, there was no, I'm going to be a conscientious objector. There wasn't that sort of freedom that America has always had. There was, you're going in this camp and no one's going to see you again. That's how insane it was back then. And there was the issue a few years ago too with the MetLife Stadium. Well, now MetLife Stadium, the stadium where the Jets and Giants play at here in New Jersey, that Allianz, that bank was looking to, you know, it was one of the companies that was considering paying for the naming rights on it. But then there was some issue about them having a history in World War II, and they backed off because of that.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where they had you really have no choice. I mean, you were in everything in that country was focused on it. If you didn't comply, you kind of disappeared, you know. But
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But the interesting thing when I was watching that that series, The Man in the High Castle, I'm watching it and, you know, there are Americans that are going along with everything. And it kind of enraged me because I was like, we're not a culture that's going to sit by and just let somebody come in and take us over without a fight, usually, you know? So it's kind of, there's that undertone of that. It's like watching it, you know, as an American, you kind of get a little annoyed at come on, man, you know, we should be fighting, you know, that kind of stuff. So
that's a big thing of our culture too. You know, why does so many great entrepreneurs and, you know, achievers come from America? There's just something that, you know, again, it's ingrained in our spirit here.
Yeah.
It's unprecedented. I mean, no other society in the world in history has ever had that sort of innovation and freedom that we've had.
And we welcome other cultures. Welcome other cultures, other countries, people from everywhere, you know?
Look at our Olympic teams. Look at the Chinese Olympic team. Not a whole lot of diversity on that Chinese team.
Yeah.
American team, you get a little bit of, you get the best of everybody from all over the world kind of coming here.
Yeah. The big melting pot, you know?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So,
So thank you to the troops. Those that are with us and those that are no longer with us.
Yes. Thank you to all of them. And actually, another side note on that same topic, I'm listening to an audiobook right now, and it's called Extreme Ownership. And it's written by two Navy SEALs. And they were Jocko, let me get the name right. I don't want to mess it up because he did a great job. Oh, of course, I'm going onto my Audible account. It's updating my my thing. It's Jocko Willink and Leif Babin. And it talks about different events that, you know, they went through in their during their SEAL career and how it translates to everyday life. So, you know, these guys do a lot of, you know, they'll do like, you know, corporate events, and they'll consult for different groups, for leadership groups. And they talk about the events that happened to them during their SEAL careers and how it translates and the lessons learned can be valuable on, you know, to everybody, and, you know, especially leadership positions.
Oh, that's really cool. It's
funny because last night I was playing hockey, and, you know, the way we play, it's like pickup. We divvy up the teams every week, make up new teams, whatever. And the team I had two of the worst players that play with us, like with the whole group. And I was thinking about this book the whole time because I was like, these guys suck. The reason why we're not winning is because they suck. And I was like, you know what? This is not what a good leader would do. A good leader would try to pick them up and build them up and try to get the team going. But nah, it's just I totally blew my opportunity to be a Navy SEAL extreme ownership positive example. I was just the whiny little spoiled jerk off who didn't get what he wanted.
Ah, little baby.
Yeah.
There's a book, speaking of SEALs, there's a book I read off, well, listened to off of Audible called The Heart and the Fist. And I liked it because it was the premise, well, it was based on a true story. And what basically happens is this guy does very smart guy, does all this like volunteer work, goes overseas, is teaching English to you know, kids in other countries and stuff, and doing all this, like, you know, he did, went away to, other countries and all this volunteer work, comes back, is graduating college, has his choice of going to tons of different companies based on his degree and his, you know, academics, for a lot of money. He could have, you know, had a very rich life, and he decides, you know, he really wanted to make a difference in the world. And he saw being in those situations that he wasn't able to make that difference, that as much as you want to put towards making a difference in those countries, they're not set up to be able to accept that the charity or the help because of the regimes that are in place. So he thought one of his choices was to go into and become a SEAL because he thought his realization was that in order to do the things that you want to do to help those people in those countries, you have to give them the freedom to be able to do that.
Wow. And it's one of the, again, it's a cultural thing. A lot of, there's been stories all throughout history, you know, of the way certain cultures have, you know, certain order or certain belief systems that, you know, you can't just be like, oh, well, this is the way we do it. You guys should just do it this way too. You know, it doesn't really work that well. There was a story a couple years ago about Korean Airlines that they had a series of crashes. And one of the reasons why one of them happened, they were saying, and I think it was the same case in the other ones, that the junior pilot saw a problem but was not able, because of the cultural, you know, kind of hierarchy, he couldn't second guess what the head pilot was doing. Because of that respect ranking. And he's like, this is messed up. We're way too low. But he couldn't say anything. And the result was the plane crashed.
Wow.
So Korean Airline had to have a whole new training system for all of their pilots, almost like to undo some of their cultural beliefs to make sure that planes don't crash anymore. Yeah.
Please don't just go along with the plane crashing. You might need to speak up.
Yeah, it's like, hey, if you see shit going down, you better say something.
Well, that was like 9/11 when the passengers took down, you know, the plane went, they tried taking down the, you know, the people trying to hijack the plane. Cause you know, they always tell you, oh, sit back and, you know, but people acted up and they saw, you know, I need to act right now.
Allegedly.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh boy. You got a conspiracy theory rabbit hole if you want to there, but yeah.
Oh, I work with a guy that's like all conspiracy theory.
Tower 7.
It's fun to have conversations too, because I'm like, it's, if anything, it makes you think and it is entertaining. But,
well, it's fun to have those conversations, but the problem is you get that little nugget in your head and you start Googling things and you're online for 6 hours and you're not sleeping because Denver you're going airport. Down that rabbit hole.
Did you go to Denver Airport?
No.
You never looked up Denver Airport? Holy crap, man. That's the best Google conspiracy. You got to look up Denver Airport and read all about it. It'll keep you entertained for days.
Oh, I think you mentioned that to me one time, but I never looked it up.
And they have all these, like, these things they draw together between, like, the Masons and a New World Order and this creepy statue they have by the airport. It's like, it's pretty interesting. Oh, really? Yeah, I'll tell you. And they start, and they talk about like famous politicians and people that own property near the airport, because that might be one of the exit places if stuff goes down. This is a whole crazy thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was a really big popular thing for a while. I think like probably like 4 years ago or maybe longer. But when the new airport came online, so yeah, you definitely gotta look it up, because it's,
I have written it down, I will definitely check it out.
The new Denver airport, yeah.
Okay. All right, so yeah, so thank you to the vets, past and present, and guys, everyone have a great Memorial Day, and check us out, skibumpodcast.com, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, instagram.com/skibumpodcast. Am I missing one? You guys know where to find it. Just go to the website. All of our social media info is there. Check us out. Also go to iTunes, subscribe, like us, love us, send out a review.
Stitcher, Tumblr, all that, right?
Everything. We're everywhere these days.
We're everywhere.
And with that, it is time for our favorite topic, Around the Horn. That is right. Game 7. Yes.
Oh, Game 7.
Oh, Game 7 is happening almost as we speak, so we're going to hopefully get wrapped through this up pretty quickly, because Penguins are playing the Lightning. I'm a big Penguins fan. I want to see them take the series. So I'm going to start it out. First up, this is from a company called Waverly Labs. There is an Indiegogo campaign that they have right now, and it's for their new product called The Pilot. Brian, what is The Pilot? Here you go, folks. The Pilot is this really funky, I think it's like a Bluetooth earpiece. It looks almost like a studio monitor that if you were at a concert, the performers would be wearing, like a, not like a regular head, like an earbud.
Like a hearing aid almost.
It looks like that, perfect, like a hearing aid, yeah. And it goes in your ear, and what it does is it attaches to your phone and becomes a translator.
So this you can, like, this is what we've been promised, like from every sci-fi like movie.
Dude, right? I mean, this is so cool. So the you can, one of the big things they're saying is this comes in multiple colors, which is probably the most unimportant thing about this.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can use this and you can translate speaking into different languages.
It could translate in English to Mandarin, but the freaking color really matters, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. So you could, I guess you can read to it and it would, or you can, someone could talk to you and you would hear it in your native language.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I guess like Google Translate does the same thing on the phone, but you gotta like put a phone in front of somebody's face, and I guess this just picks it all up.
But this is right in your ear.
That's nice.
I mean, how unbelievably cool is that?
I want one of these. I'm too lazy to learn another language. I've tried like probably like 3 different languages now, and I butcher them all.
It's only a matter of time before we have one language as a people. I mean, think about how many languages they had, you know, hundreds of years ago. Probably every town had their own language, pretty much.
Does it translate New York region to North Carolina?
Forget about it.
And Alabama. Hey, y'all.
God damn.
Golly.
It might have that feature as well.
That's right. You're a Yankee means, hey, how's it going, person from the North?
So yeah, this is waverlylabs.com. You can check it out and you can get it on that pre-order list if you so desire. It's a pretty cool product.
Nice.
So next up, we have something that's close to Brian's heart right now, since he's riding his bike everywhere.
That's right.
Bike Mine, it's an alarm to protect your stuff. So you can put it on your bike, you put it on your motorcycle, boat, jet ski, and you attach it on there. And they're saying it's the world's loudest alarm. So it's going to – it'll, you know, make a huge noise. I think it has even like a sat, like a puff of smoke or something too. It's like weird.
Yeah, it's almost like a bang snap or something. Yeah, they have videos on their website, and it's pretty. It's so funny.
I guess it's to draw attention if somebody's jacking your thing. Like, people see the cloud of smoke and like, oh my god, what happened there? That's what normally people would do, right?
So. Yeah, I mean, think about why car alarms worked back in the day, because everything was quiet, and all of a sudden you hear this crazy noise going off, and you're like, oh my god, what's going on? You look, you see someone try to break into someone's car, and you would probably do something about it. Yeah. But now you hear it everywhere all the time, and you don't care anymore. So it's just it doesn't work.
So when you see a little smoke and you hear the sound, it's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah. So it's pretty funny, and it reminds me a little bit of the South American traffic car alarms I had back in the day, like when Johannesburg was. You know, I mean, I've heard it's still not great, but it was really really bad back then. They had flamethrowers. Kind of like a flamethrower car alarm built into the car.
So holy moly, that's terrifying.
Under where the doors would be, there was like this multiple, I don't know, multiple pipe flamethrower that would pretty much barbecue the guy trying to break into your car.
That is nuts. What if you forgot your key and you're trying to get in?
And therein lies the problem. Or like a little kid starts playing with the door or something.
That's funny.
Barbecued toddler, yeah.
This thing has a little charge that makes the smoke and the sound. It's like a half of a shotgun shell.
Yeah.
It's like a little cartridge that you know, it's like a bullet, you know, it's almost like a shell.
Yeah, it's amazing they get away with making this thing, but it's pretty cool. It's on Kickstarter right now. You can check it out. We'll have the link in the show notes. Now, they are going for a $21,000 goal. They only have $5,000 so far, but they got 28 days left. So.
Oh, they got plenty. They just started there, mate.
They got plenty of time, yeah. But it's
forget about it.
Forget about it. It's pretty neat, though. So check it out. Bike Mine. All right. Next up now, we have – now, this is a dynamite story. So this company has this brewery, actually, in Florida. So props back to Florida. This company, they have created biodegradable six-pack rings that double as what? As goddamn fish food.
I love that.
So there's all these stories and sad pictures you see of like a little duck, you know, he's got the six-pack plastic ring.
Oh, and the turtles and stuff. It's horrible pictures.
Oh, the poor turtle's like 600 years old. And he's got this plastic thing around him. When he was born, plastic didn't even exist. He doesn't know what's going on.
Crazy. So
this company, they decided to make a biodegradable, edible version of the six-pack ring.
I don't know why they didn't do this sooner.
This seems like it was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But they finally figured out how to do it.
But the plastic lobby wanted to, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. DuPont or whoever was, creating all the different plastic rings probably don't like this. But this is so cool. So, you know, it's almost no waste now when you're having your beers.
It's great.
Yeah.
You can get it and throw it in the water after. Like, hey, I'm done with it. Just throw it in the water.
Well, think about what other possibilities it offers us for humans too. You know, say you want to make one out of potentially cannabis.
Nice.
You know, you can like dip it in your beer after, or make it out of like, you know, tortilla chips.
Are you saying the pretzel one? So you have pretzels and beer in one shot.
Yeah, like gummy pretzels. So you can just rip it off and then start eating it after while you're having your beer.
Have like a big German pretzel one that you hold with a handle, and then you just start ripping it off and eating it with some mustard.
I think 2017, we're going to see a lot of innovative beer holding devices.
Oh, yeah, with all the microbrews and stuff coming out.
Yeah, I think this is going to get people thinking now about what else can we do with, I mean, you know, there's a lot of cardboard involved and plastic. We can do better, I think.
When I was in Florida just this last time, from Thanksgiving to now, I heard of about 8 new breweries that have opened up in just the Tampa area.
No kidding.
At like decent size, like with tap rooms and everything. I'm like, holy crap, this is like a really big fad down there. It's a fad up here. Like, we're seeing more open up here, but I almost think it's taken off in certain areas like a little bit more. crazy.
Yeah, people love beer, and people don't want to work in an office, so I get it.
Yeah.
This makes sense to me. So, awesome story. Keep it going, folks. And now, Mario, you've got one more humdinger of a story to end the week.
I got the humdinger. So, there's a stone sheep are going on psychotic rampages after eating cannabis plants dumped in a Welsh village. So, this is from jolly old Wales. And I guess sheep are feared to have gone on a psychotic rampage after eating cannabis plants that I guess they busted somebody and they dumped these cannabis plants. And, you know, the remains of an illegal cannabis factory were, they say, fly-tipped, you know, just turned over and just left there. And I guess they figured, you know, plants are not going to grow anymore. They're just going to die off, whatever. So they just left them. Well, these sheep are like, you know, sheep out there, they just roam everywhere. And they said, hey, here's something nice to eat. So they ate it. And I guess you just see sheep just being jerks going into, like, into the village and, like, eating people's gardens out and entering people's houses and just hanging out, making a mess. It's pretty funny how, like, they're writing it like, oh, my God, this is, like, a big problem that we're going to have. But it's, like, it's just when sheep go wild, you know?
It's a big problem because there's so much weed, right, and so many sheep.
It's just funny. You got to worry about these sheep just getting high and just, like, doing shit to their town.
Well, you know what? That's what cannabis is a very – when eaten that way, it's a psychedelic. So, you know, it's like when those the stories –
fuck.
Like the stories of, like, the cops, you know, like – calling 911 because they ate some pot brownies. Like, this is definitely laced with something. It's not laced with anything. That's just how your body treats cannabis when it's ingested that way.
You're just high balls right now.
Yeah, right. It was not laced with anything. You just got some high sheep. Now, would the sheep's milk be altered because of the cannabis?
It would in the immediate time that they're producing. That's why the, like, mothers, you know, breastfeeding mothers shouldn't. They have to stay away from, like, alcohol because it'll come out in their milk. So I imagine sheep is the same way.
So could that be a whole nother category of cheese? Is you get these sheep just high, or cows, get them super high and then milk them?
You're right on the – you're exactly right. You're going to have a whole bunch of weed-laced milk and cheese out there.
I mean, that could be one of the most amazing things ever.
That's right. Just slip that in.
Right?
I don't know why my baby's sleeping so well. Yeah, well, it's not.
Yeah, right.
You got to make sure you give him the right milk.
I think that could be amazing. Then you're just starting out. I mean, you could have pizza made with cheese from a high cow.
With the oil from the weed too.
A double. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Double trouble it.
Double dizzle.
Double dizzle. Yeah. So these sheep are getting just stoned out of their mind because I guess they just keep eating. I guess they're a little bit like goats. They just eat and eat and eat. So they just come across this weed and like, hey, I'm going to eat this too.
Bunch of sheep stoners, huh?
It's funny that they're getting just high as fuck. Just like going into town and just eating stuff. Like, we got the munchies, man. We're going to eat your garden.
I love it.
That's funny, though.
That is a beautiful thing.
Like, don't get in my way, man. I'm just high. Just leave me alone.
Like, nah.
But they make it sound like they're, like, you know, zombie sheep, like, attacking people. They're probably just high, just wandering anywhere, everywhere.
They're just chilling out, probably, having a good time. I get some snacks.
Yeah. They're just, like, probably not paying attention to people shooing them away. They're like, man, I am so hungry. Awesome.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. So that's going to be our last story for getting ready for the Memorial Day weekend. So hope everyone has an awesome Memorial Day weekend. And one parting thought. So I saw this on Twitter, and I thought it was unbelievable. So Apple, the company, has $233 billion in reserve cash. So they could buy every NFL team, every NBA team, every Major League Baseball team, every NHL team, and still have $80 billion in the bank.
Wow. That would be awesome to own all those teams. You'd be like, all right, we're going to have the Apple NFL, call the AFL, the ABA, the ALB, and the AHL.
Yes, they could pretty much do that. So, you know, that's with all your iPhones, and we got our Macs and our iPads and everything here. That's where all of our money is going. That we could we could be creating some super super sports juggernaut.
You can create that on Mars too with that money. Boom. M-A-R-S.
I think that's the future right there.
I-Mars.
I-Mars. You can buy the whole planet. It's got to be cheap right now.
That's right. Unless Elon Musk is there already.
Which I believe he is.
He's going to call it X-Mars.
I think he's already there.
SpaceX, X-Mars, and then you have I-Mars competing. Two sides.
Rival planet. Just like the man in the high tower.
That's right.
Man on the high planet.
Man on the high planet. With the sheep. The sheep that are high on the planet.
High sheep on Mars.
Sheep on the high planet.
Yes, this podcast had something for everyone. All right, so wraps it up. Have an awesome Memorial Day weekend.
Be safe.
Thank you for listening. SkiBumPodcast.com. Get all of our info. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and please rate us and please love us because we love you. So thank you again so much for listening, and we will see you guys next week.
Stay high, stay fluent.
See ya.